down by the water.
Welcome back to season 2 of the Run Culture Podcast. My name is Dane Verway. I'm an experienced running physiotherapist, coach, and marathoner. This season will involve open discussions with my running colleagues about the key principles behind injury-free running and optimal performance. It'll be backed by personal experience, science, and history. I can only hope some of these chats inspire curiosity and expand or confirm perspectives and beliefs amongst the running community. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the episode. Today's podcast is a great lesson for any runner who has plateaued for a long time and feels like they'll never improve again. Up until 9 months ago, John Dutton had not improved in the marathon for 10 years. Last weekend, John broke the 220 barrier at the 2023 Gold Coast Marathon. This is his second PB in 9 months over the distance. John has now shaved a whopping 6 minutes off in 9 months. We all have our barrier, some kind of goal that drives us and tantalizes us. Can we do it, or is it a step out of reach? I've known John personally for many years. We have run together and run against each other. We've spoken many times about breaking the illustrious 220 barrier in the marathon. This has been a barrier that John has dreamt about breaking for his whole running career. John is a father of two boys, he's a full-time plasterer, and has run more than 20 marathons or ultra marathons since 2005. So, how has he done it? Well, be sure to listen in as this conversation between two running mates is full of wisdom. We sure hope that the stories and learnings we shared today help others run faster and learn faster than we have. So be sure to listen in, and I just need to share a thanks to John for jumping onto this show and allowing me to share it, because the story today I think is a fantastic one. It's John's marathon story, his marathon journey. So yeah, tune in. That's enough from me. Enjoy it. Welcome back to another episode of the Run Culture Podcast. Today, it's my absolute pleasure to have John Dutton, long-term friend, long-time running partner, on the show, fresh off his amazing performance at the Gold Coast Marathon a week or so ago. John, you must feel so happy. That performance a week or so ago, what was it? And tell us how you're feeling.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dane. It's crazy to think it's been a week already.
Yeah.
I ran 2:19:49, which was 19th overall on the Gold Coast, which is massive, a 2 minute PB. And yeah, it's a massive, massive barrier, like a career sort of barrier to break that 220. So yeah, I'm wrapped.
I know how much that time means to you. Like I've heard you talk about breaking 220 amongst some other fellow running friends over a number of years. It's been a long time goal. I don't know when your first marathon was. You've done a lot of marathons to get here. How old are you now, and how long has this process been to reach this goal? Because this has been like we said just recently when we've been chatting about it together, probably a career's worth of training to get to this stage.
So I'm 36. I turn 37 in about 3 or 4 weeks, and I started running at the end of 2005. So and my first marathon was a 3:37 at Melbourne in 2008. So it's been a really long process.
All right. And so when you ran that run last week and you ran 2:19, were you expecting that?
training suggested that it was tracking towards something like that. So we, my coach and I heard there's a 219 pace group.
Yeah.
And I felt comfortable knowing that I could go with that. So obviously marathons don't always work out, but we were pretty confident going in that I could at least be in that group. So, but yeah, it paid off.
Now, for a number of years, I feel like you were stuck, plateaued sort of on sort of the mid 220s, like 225, for a number of reasons, like whether it was injury or like having, you know, preps that didn't go exactly how you went or how you wanted, or going out too fast, or just not having the day that you wanted. Talk us through like what's happened over the last 18 months or so, because it wasn't only this performance, but last year at Melbourne Marathon, you also ran a really quick time. What do you put down like this breakthrough in your running?
I was stuck on 225 for I think 9 years. Just couldn't get past it. Like you say, it was injury or illness or just trying to jump the steps. Instead of going 225, take a minute off or 2 minutes off, I thought I could just go from 225 to sub 220.
Yeah.
And overtraining from some preps, and that led to like sacral stress fractures and things like that, which I've since learned from. But I think the biggest breakthrough was diving back into having a coach. And I'd spent on and off, I've had some help, I've had Mona help me from time to time, but as far as a full-time coach, it's probably been a decade that I've just been going from training program to training program, trying to work it out on my own and trying to fit in with lifestyle and family and all that stuff as well. So it's I think the biggest breakthrough is getting a coach. So
What has getting a coach, like how has that changed your training, like compared to when you had full reins of your program? Like what is it, do you feel like it's meant, how do you think it's helped you?
So my coach is Benson Lawrence, who's two-time Olympian, I believe, and former 10K Australian record holder. So he's been coaching me since the start of 2022. And from the very first phone call we had, he was like, your lifestyle doesn't suit training twice a day, so that's gone. Whereas for me, to miss a run, I used to get frustrated. I'm not doing enough training. This is why I'm not hitting the times. And that frustration nearly stops you from running because I had enough of being in that plateau. And it was like a breath of fresh air, him saying, no more getting up early before work, none of that. So you're training once a day, and I haven't run a double run in 18 months. So I'm running, whereas some preps I've gone over 200K a week, before Gold Coast, I didn't even hit 150. So I think that is the difference, is trusting that process.
How good is that? Like that's incredible. You've done less and you're going faster. So you're probably just being more efficient. You're respecting your overall like lifestyle. And sometimes it just has to come from someone highly credible that you trust, that you've seen, well, they've gone and gone pretty far with their performance. So they must have got something right. And you've just gone, I'm going to listen to Ben. And then I guess it probably like, you get more confident like after your Melbourne result last year, where you, suddenly ran a 2:21. I think it was it 9 weeks, after having COVID? And with this different approach where, you don't have the pressure of going, to be a good runner, I have to run twice a day. To be a good runner, I have to do 200 Ks a week. You suddenly like you said, a breath of fresh air and going, well, doing less, I'm actually going better. It's a win-win.
And like you say, COVID before Melbourne as well, like each week of training then had to be, I couldn't do too much, but I had to do enough where my fitness was progressing.
Yep.
So I got to Melbourne, not really sure where my fitness was, but hoping I could still run a PB. So to run, I think that was 3.5 minute PB at Melbourne off a prep that was, it was good, but it wasn't ideal because I'd been sick on and off for probably 6 to 8 weeks before getting COVID.
Yep.
And then had to make every post a winner. So I could, from that race, I've been able to go forward knowing that prep wasn't ideal and I ran well. So there is I'm more relaxed from it, and I've been more relaxed since Melbourne because of,
yes,
because of how that went.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. No, I think also like it made you feel like yeah, I think that's the hard thing with the marathon is like, because it's so far, like 42 Ks, and it's really hard to replicate that in training. You never know if you're going to be fit enough. So we always find ourselves overcompensating and doing more because we're insecure with like how we feel like we're going. And so like to know that you could run as well as you did by someone helping lead the way and show you, yeah, you can do less and run well. And then you actually experience that at Melbourne, it probably helped you buy into the process really even more so.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. Cause I didn't have the base behind me because of the illness before Melbourne. So I couldn't go out and do these crazy things that I've done in the past with big sessions or big long runs.
Yep.
I had to chip away each week to build that fitness and strength. So I would have peaked on race day perfectly, I think, which rarely happens. But to be able to do that off a bad prep, I took a lot from that.
Do you think, you've also, your peaking has been better since you've had a coach on board? Like I've been following you for a long time and you have done some amazing things on Strava or in training or on races that probably were your B goal or C goal and like things look good, but then like you probably like got the timing wrong. Like you probably, like I've seen you do a 27K training run a few weeks before Gold Coast and then get a sacral stressy, but the writing was on the wall that you probably were in good shape in that 27K training run, but then it was just one run too early or...
Yeah. Like peaking 3 to 4 weeks early, like big sessions, which was actually my race day.
Yes,
and
yeah.
I guess making the mistakes, you should come out the other side a bit wiser and stop making those same mistakes. So I think I've at least, what did I say, the end of 2005 to now, like those 18 years, I've definitely grown and I've learned some patience as well. So
do you think you have to make those mistakes to get where you want to get to? Like I've started to, like I've made those mistakes too, and a lot of them. But I think you have to make, like my personal opinion is you have to make some of these mistakes to learn and to get better. Some people just take longer to learn and reflect and just go, oh, hang on, maybe there is a different way to do it. What's your whole like idea on that?
It's a harsh way to do things, but yeah. I think you do have to learn. Like,
yeah,
an injury is the greatest way to learn from something, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know where the limit is and you know you really should be a little bit back from that every time. So it's I've run I think 15 marathons now and about 10 ultras as well, and you do learn more about yourself each one you do. I think that you can't just keep hammering away at something and think it's going to change. Like,
yeah,
I think that's why I was plateauing for 9-10 years at the same spot.
Yes,
because I was just trying to keep repeating what I was doing.
Yep.
And the outcome was going to be the same.
Yes, like you're just trying to like force your way there, hammer your way through there through just like sheer bloody hard work.
Yeah.
but then now you just sort of Ben's helped open your eyes that there's a smarter way, and if you more efficiently channel your effort, you're more likely to sort of get where you want. And it's hard because like it could easily be misinterpreted as being lazy or like, oh, geez, I'm not doing this double, or I'm not doing this, or I'm not doing this. But I think as distance runners, often distance runners are quite they're not lazy. Like, who would go for a run, like, if you're lazy? Like, so I think to know that we're inherently not lazy and we're actually more likely to be on the other side and overachievers or perfectionists or a bit too driven and often shoot ourselves in the foot. Would you agree with that? Like, there's a lot of runners out there like that where we probably do have a tendency to overtrain.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I've learned that nothing's going to be perfect. No prep's going to be perfect. No athlete's perfect. And I think the greatest thing, when I started with Ben, I had nothing to lose. So I was open to any way that he would train somebody. Because I have tried everything. I've tried lots. I've tried less. I've tried long sessions, short sessions.
Yeah.
And just before I contacted him, I did the biggest week I'd done in probably 12 months.
Yep.
Lots of elevation gain, all this in the hills. Yep. And I just pulled up sore and I'm like, well, I'm not getting anywhere. I'm trying to cut corners again from not enough training to too much.
Yeah.
And it needs to stop. If I'm serious, it needs to stop and I need outside help.
Yep.
So, because, like you say, everyone overtrains because we're not lazy. And we're runners and we want to do more is better.
Yeah.
Faster is better. Which it's not always the case. So,
We've got such a bias towards that way of thinking. And I think a coach can just really help have that distant sort of perspective on it and not be caught up in our emotions and our biases and help us see the differentiate between the two of what's trying too hard and what's being smart. And like, tell us a bit more about like your relationship with Ben and how that works. So like, how much of a say do you have in training? How much does he, and how does it work?
Well, we actually have really good communication. Like, so Ben coaches me via correspondence.
Yep.
And say like a week before the race, I woke up. The only chance I had to do the run was before work on a Friday.
Yeah.
Because my son plays football Friday nights now.
Yep.
And I woke up and I was tired. So I just, instead of doing the hour run, I didn't run. I just took it off completely. Or if I have an hour, sorry, I did 40 minutes, 50 minutes. It always, there's always to in and fro in. So we're flexible with how things work. And generally we have learned that less is always going to be better with me.
Yep.
Whereas I used to always think I can handle it, so more is better.
Yeah.
So, because, coming into races fresh, knowing that I've still done the aspects of training that are going to help me, had me relaxed on race day, knowing that I've done everything and I feel good.
So, and give our listeners a bit of a insight to what, how many kids you've got and what you do for a job, because actually, you helped do the plastering of my gym out there, and
it looks good too.
It looks really good, actually. And while I was finishing up with my last patient, you were admiring your handiwork. But I saw in first-hand experience of how hard you work, not just in running, but from a working perspective in your work. Like, you were there all weekend. I've never seen someone work so hard, and you set yourself your own challenges. You're like, I'm going to get this done by this time. And you just kept going. It's obviously like a bit of a personality trait of yours. But yeah, give listeners a bit of an insight to what you do for work and your family dynamics.
Yep. So I'm a qualified plasterer and I've been doing that for just over 20 years. Yep. And I'm married with two kids. I've got two boys, Henry, who's 8 next week, and Max, who's 6 the week after.
Yeah.
And, very active kids, very active lifestyle. So, always busy running around after them now too. So that's been a new dynamic the last few years as well.
Yeah. Have you found that's been hard, like juggling your running, with the two kids?
Initially, I struggled being, I'd say content. I don't know if that's the right word, a willingness to just let it go a bit more instead of stressing over the runs that I'm missing and just enjoying when I am out there. So I think that's tied in well with Ben coming on board and his approach to my training as well. Like it's suddenly I feel like I've got more time to get everything in instead of every add in extra elements to my day and then going, well, running's going to miss out today. Whereas
yeah.
I'm just more comfortable in my own space, I think.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Oh, really good. What else do you think you've learnt over the last 18 months, whether it was from Ben or just in general, like what else do you attribute like, yeah, this amazing run last week to?
Well,
yeah,
obviously being more relaxed and yep. patience as well. Like
yep.
I've, again, what I learnt from Melbourne is I just got to be patient, chip away at it. And if I miss a week, miss a day, it all adds up. Like we all know this. We know that your blocks of training means more than any session.
Yes.
But
yep. The consistency over time.
The consistency over time is definitely there now. Like
yep.
You look on Strava and it's not all consistent graphs still, but the bulk and the aspects of the week that are important, the most important ones are all there.
Yeah.
So
yep.
So my kilometers might be up and down, but then when you look, well, actually, he's done 20 minutes less on a Monday because he's tired from Sunday.
Yeah.
Instead of just being a slave to the program and
yes.
going day to day to day and then going, oh, I'm too tired now. I've got to miss a week.
Yeah.
So I think patience is the biggest thing I've learned the last
yep.
probably 18 months.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think that message is so good. Not being a slave to the program just because you had planned this, and this. Being a bit more in the moment and listening to your body and listening to your life stresses and your circumstances and going, I'm going to have to take a little bit off here so that I can stay consistent for the rest of the week and I'll have energy for when it counts. Like, these are the priorities this week. That's fantastic.
And what I found also helps, Ben typically sends out maybe 4 weeks of a program. So I knew in sort of mid-May what I was doing for my peak weeks of Gold Coast training.
Yep.
And then I could look ahead and go, all right, this biggest weekend actually falls on the long weekend. So I could plan and work my way to that week, like energy-wise and run-wise,
yep.
weeks out, knowing that if I actually cut here or
yep.
cut here,
yep.
I'm going to be in better shape for when I have to be ready to go for that weekend.
Yes.
And I'm not going to be cooked 3 weeks out.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good. I think viewing the long term and going, it's like I think we can get a bit too caught up into the session that we're currently doing a lot of the time, yeah. and it suddenly means way more than it needs to, and then we put too many eggs in that basket in that one session, and then suddenly we're cooked for
yep.
2 days' time. So that's, looking ahead and viewing the sustainable way of looking at things and viewing the program as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've also do all my sessions on effort now and not paces.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've always been someone that's, okay, hard is hard, easy is easy, and that
yep.
could mean that your first kilometer for a session is really fast and then you're like, well, I've got to try and stay here now, which
yeah
there's so many mistakes we made just in that.
Yeah.
So like then if
you're a numbers guy, aren't you?
I am a numbers guy. And then, so then when you're training and you're heading into a headwind or something,
yeah,
you're trying to match the same pace you were in a tailwind, which
doesn't make
it doesn't.
Yeah.
All you're going to do is cook yourself again.
Yeah.
Session more important than the block.
Yeah.
Instead of just going by feel, like my last.
Or numbers more important than workout and stress.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking about, oh no, this pace has to be here so that I'm happy about it. You're really tied
yeah.
to that result. But then at the end of the day, that pace into the headwind is equivalent to so much quicker.
Yeah.
So then why are you operating at that pace
yep.
when you're trying to do a marathon session or whatever you're trying to achieve in that session?
And it used to really affect me. I used to get quite anxious before doing sessions because
yep.
then you're pinning, doing a good session on hitting your paces every single time.
Yes.
And it doesn't work. Whereas
yeah.
my last, I'd say big session, so I had a 25 minute tempo 8 days before Gold Coast.
Yep.
I just had the timer and lap time on. So
yep.
the pace is a slight variant in pace every 5-10 minutes. And I got to the end and I'm like, wow, that was the pace. That was quick.
Yep.
Whereas during the session, I had no idea.
Yep.
I was just going by feel, going by effort. And then you find out at the end, instead of pinning all your hopes on hitting those paces.
And I think, like even thinking of it from a physiological point of view, like our body, I think in terms of like, how do we know that like training at a certain intensity, is going to exactly elicit the change that we want. I think training by feel, like our body is telling us, no, this is marathon pace today or half marathon pace today, because I've had a stressful day. Yeah, it's 10 seconds, 15 seconds slower than I want it to be, but it just feels like the effort that I could run for a half marathon pace today. Let's not get read into the numbers. I'll get the physiological response that I need. My body feels like, I think thinking of it like that has helped me have the same discovery as you, John, over the years too. It's like, I used to just blast everything out of the park too as a junior, because you're like, nah, you got to train hard.
That's what you do.
Yeah, and at the start it works because you're a clean slate and you're actually young and you're teeming with hormones, so you just recover whatever you do. But then you have to start to get a bit more deliberate. Life gets a bit more complex. You're doing more things. You got kids. You're working full time, and you're aging, and so you've just got to be a bit more deliberate and smarter with the way that you spread your energy. Yeah,
and I think that's where people get into trouble. Like, and I've made this mistake as well. You let your training, you don't let your training dictate what you should do on race day. You get fixed with a time in your head, like I'm going to run 3 hours for a marathon or 4 or 5.
Yep.
And then you force your training to be that.
Yep.
Instead of your training then going, this is the shape I'm in.
Yeah.
Whereas for Gold Coast, I knew the shape I was in, and that's why I went with the pace group I went with.
Yeah.
Because of training.
Yes. That's a really awesome point, John. Yeah, I think training to feel, so if you're like, if you've shown potential over several years that you could be a sub 220 guy through whatever result, then you've got to trust the process and trust that, no, I'm good enough if I train to how I am right now.
Yep.
And if I just keep taking the next logical step with how my body feels right now, rather than trying to force this piece into the puzzle when it's not ready, but I just sort of keep just nurturing my body and keep just gently nudging it in the right direction and facilitating it in the right direction, I think, yeah, that's spot on. I think we get so stuck on, I've got to run 3:19 per K for this session because that's what I've got to do on race day in 10 weeks time.
Yeah.
And you're not there yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas by not knowing, my last big session, I think I was averaging 3:10s or something. So all of a sudden my training saying that, 3:18s to 3:20s, that might feel a bit crappy on race day even because I'm training ahead of that.
Yeah.
So, which for the first probably 15K, it did feel a bit clunky and a bit hard because everything was ahead of that in training, which is a good way to be, which obviously worked out. So,
mate, tell us a bit more about race day. So like you said, the first 15K felt a bit clunky. Put yourself back a week's time. Tell us what was going through your head in the lead up to that race and then on the start line and that first 15K. What can you remember if you try to like hark back right now?
So in the weeks leading in, we found out that Malcolm Hicks from New Zealand was going to be pacing 2:19. So I thought he was a 2:12 marathon, but he's actually 2:10, which made me feel even more at ease because I'm like, he's got this covered. So
nice.
And his plan was to go to 30K.
Okay.
So we're like, yep, that's perfect group. Training says, 2:19 is, you know, a little fade and 2:20 still on the card. So just sat in that group and you headed south down to Burleigh Heads, which is generally a headwind.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little worried that because we'd be going, we potentially we could go a little too fast, which the lead group usually does because they try and hit their paces.
Yep.
And I thought, well, being in the pace group, we're probably going to be the same. So we're going to be right on the right on the pace we need, but into a headwind. So we might cook ourselves, but, and it felt a bit clunky because my training, my races leading in had been quite a bit faster.
Yep.
And I thought, well, just get to the turnaround at 15 and a half K. And then the pace, if we quicken, might actually feel more comfortable. And in the end, it did. So it was nice. Then I felt my position in the group, because we had probably a dozen guys in there at one stage in that group. I went from the back and dropping off a couple of times, because it just, into the wind, we're almost surging.
Yep.
Picking it up and then dropping off. And I'd drop off because I wasn't surging as much as the front of the group. So that's slow, and then I'd come back running the same pace. And
for once, were you a bit scared doing that? Like obviously, you know, after years of experience, that the marathon's a long way, and you know that, like, you know, the race isn't one and done in that first 15K. So what was going through your head when you're sort of finding it hard, or you just sort of knew, you just sort of, like you said, thought that, like, that can be part of it, and let's just try to conserve and just run as much my own race and make sure it's not forced, because that can lead to a very big positive split, can't it, in a marathon, if you're forcing it too much too early.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, you lose minutes and hours, like, yeah, out there if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And but I was worried. I was, because, yeah, I was off the back,
yeah,
way too early for a pace I thought I could run.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking, well, maybe the just under 2:22 I ran at Melbourne, maybe that's my limit. Maybe, yeah, I have gone out too fast.
Yeah.
And but then every time I was able to get back, I was getting a little bit more confident, and the body was feeling just a little bit better, because I'm like, I'm still in this group and the pace hasn't slowed, and I'm still here and hit halfway and I'm still here. And I wouldn't say it ever felt smooth out there or felt comfortable.
Yep.
Because then once you start getting really tired, you're in the crux of the marathon at like 28, 30K,
and, yeah,
everyone's feeling crap at that stage, and you just got to get to the finish then, really. So
talk us through that part of the race. So like that back end of the race, what are your memories? What are some flashes that still like very vivid in your mind?
I'll say one flash. Yeah. The only thought, I must have been really relaxed, because through coming up to the half marathon split, I had my brother Pete's PB that he ran the day before. That's all I had in my head.
Oh, I thought so, because you ran it, didn't you?
I think I ran it to the second, so, because I knew he'd be watching the splits, and I knew that would have popped up, and he would have gone, oh crap, he's either gone too hard or he's loving this. So, but yeah, I think I was relaxed.
Was it 69:27 or
something like that, 29, yeah, or it was, yeah, very close anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is the fastest first half I've done.
But, by how much?
Half a minute.
Wow.
But then,
and so what's going through your head? Like obviously you're trying to show your younger brother up, but then what else is going through your head? Like, are you uncertain at this point? Or like, cause you said you're not feeling smooth. Like,
I must've been feeling okay at this point, because, okay, I was on the shoulder of the pacer, and we still, yep, had probably a dozen guys there. So I'd move, yep, from, typically I was at the back getting ready for drink stations, because that was a bit of a nightmare, like getting your bottles knocked over, and because, yep, at Gold Coast I think it's under 2:30 for elite and 2:45 for priority for men, and so you get your own bottles, which the tables are all jammed close together, and it's hit and miss. Like, you got to eye your bottle up early without slowing down, make sure you get it, and the first couple have to stop and actually find it because they've been knocked over. So,
yeah,
but by halfway I was in a good position, feeling all right, and then a K later I was almost off the back again, and I'm like, maybe I've worked too hard to move up in the group, and then it settled down again, and I was back on and feeling relaxed, and go past all these kids in Surfers Paradise and give them high fives. And like, even my wife afterwards, like, I can't believe you'd never do something like that mid-race. So
what'd you do? You gave them high fives.
I moved I moved from one side of the road across to the left-hand side just to do it as well. So
wow,
I must have, in my head at that point, I must have been quite relaxed and
yeah,
feeling pretty good because I'm willing to go out of my way to do that. So
yeah.
So and yeah, from sort of 28K, there was maybe six of us left, and we passed a couple of guys, and they shot out the back, and there's probably four guys that wanted to move on a little bit, like kick the pace down a bit, and I wasn't willing to do it. And the pacer said to us, I was running next to my training partner Craig Appleby.
Yep.
And which is cool because every Sunday we run together, and then
yeah,
for Gold Coast for probably 2 hours we were side by side.
Yeah.
And the pacer turned to us and said, "You happy with this pace still?" And we're like, "Yeah, this is pretty much all we got." And,
yeah.
And he ended up taking us through 30K and stopped at, I think, about 32,
oh, nice,
nearly 33K.
Okay.
And yeah, so I was feeling all right, but sort of close to the limit, still moving quickly.
Yeah.
And but knew that there was an edge that I could go over if I pushed a little bit too hard. So it was, I think the 30K split was probably the shock.
Oh, like, yeah. What was that?
That was just over 138.
And now what, so you know what your 30, because you've run a lot of marathons, yeah. So what's your 30K split normally?
I haven't gone under 140.
Okay.
So this was,
yeah,
this was massive to go through, yeah, and go, oh shit, this is happening.
Like, so do you think, like, that was that a moment where you think, oh, I can do this? Or like, did that give you confidence, or were you still just like, oh, this could go either way here?
The thing with Gold Coast, because you go, at 31K, you go over this crest and you're adjacent to the finish.
Oh, yeah.
But then you got to go north.
That's tough.
Which gets quite quiet, less spectators, a bit warmer too.
Like, and you start feeling. Past the finish line, you run past the finish line with 12K to go, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. And, and 9 out of 10 marathons you do there, you'll drop your bundle. Like, mentally, it's a bridge too far, and you can't handle it.
Yes.
So to go through 30K that quickly, and then the pace is saying you're on mid 218 pace.
Yep.
I felt I had more to lose at that point than gain.
Because
I could still run 230 at that point. Like, it could get really ugly.
Yes.
So I knew I had to just concentrate and knuckle down on
what you could do.
What I could do to get to the finish the best way I could.
Yep.
Without completely blowing up and ruining what was a good 30K.
And so, how do you navigate that? Like, what worked for you? Like, what kept you? Because it's obviously like there's so much stuff in your body screaming at you to slow down. Like, there must be so many things telling you, oh, just take the foot off the gas a bit. Just ease it in now. Like, what kept you going? Like, what do you think helped?
I think having the pacer still there for a couple K longer than he'd said was one thing, and having Apples there as well, and he was having the same issues, like our hamstrings are getting tired, and I'm like, hey, I've got the same thing. This is.
Are you talking at this point, or?
We weren't talking as much. The odd thing here or there, and because he was being ridiculous. Like, halfway through, he pointed out a banana on the road. Like,
oh, really?
Like it was Mario Kart or something. It was just, I think we were all at one point in that group relaxed, and because we didn't have to think as much because we had the pacer.
Mm-hmm.
We had a well-organized international class event as well. So we just had to turn up and run the time. So
how many times do you think you've had that in all your marathon attempts? Like, how many times have you been by yourself for most of that at the time?
Especially Gold Coast. So Gold Coast will have the world-class athletes at the front.
Yeah.
And then they'll have the pace groups from 230, 240, all the way to 6.5 hours or whatever they have. But you got that 215 to 225 gap where you could just be on your own.
Yep.
And you could be on your own for half the race as well. And I think that's where Melbourne paid off as well. Like, I sort of fell into this random pace group that had been organised, which typically wouldn't be there.
Yep.
So I think lightning strike twice in a row now where I've just been fit in the right place at the right time for the pace group that was being organised.
Yes.
So, which helped.
It helps, doesn't massively. It? Like, you just, I like what you said about just having, not having to worry, just being able to relax and just follow the pace and know that the pace is taking care of it. You just have to stay on the back of this group, yeah, and keep up.
Which I was much more comfortable at the back. Like it, whereas some people you go, oh, he's dropping off the group. Whereas, yeah, being at the back was, in a group that big that we had, it felt safer as well. Because, yep, it's quite hectic in a group going like 318s, 315s. We got even some cases of 310s through Surfers Paradise. So it's to and fro and blustery day as well. The pack's always moving across the road as well. So to get a spot where you feel comfortable is not an easy task.
So, yeah, that's incredible. So 310s to 318s. What did you average? What is 219? Just to give listeners a bit of an idea and perspective of what K pace you were running. Like, what was your average? What was your slowest K? What was your fastest K?
Yep, so yeah, my average was 318s, like just under 319s, I think.
Yeah.
And my slowest K was the 41st K, which, yeah, was a 331.
Yep.
So I hit 40K marker.
Yep.
And the split popped up because I was hitting my watch every 5K. So it's another thing that I've added at Melbourne. Like, I used to run, I needed to know the distance, the pace, all that. And yep, I got rid of it all. So
yep,
I roughly knew, but every 5K, then I go, all right, this is the pace I'm doing. So, so that split was just under 17:30, which meant that if I kept that pace up, I was going to run 2:21 or something. So
yep,
a PB, but
yeah,
it's neither here or there. You at 2:22, you want to go under 2:20. So
yeah, that's the next hurdle. Yeah,
and so I'm like, okay, I've actually got to lift the pace. So a 3:31 wasn't on the cards, and then the fastest was the last half a K. I ran 3:08.
Jeez.
So wow. Yeah, and it wasn't until like a
so golf, if you didn't run that last half a K like that,
no,
you wouldn't have got it.
So because I keep playing over and over in my head for months and months. I'm going to run through 40K. I'll go 2:12. Yep. That'll give me 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Whereas generally I run about 7.5,
yep,
from 40 to the finish.
Yeah.
So my 8 minutes, I can enjoy the finish. It's all good.
Soak it up.
Well, I hit 40K in 2:12:20 or something. So I'm like, okay, I'm in trouble. Off the back of that last split,
yep,
I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
I got to run 3:20s.
Uh-huh.
And at Gold Coast, you come down this long straight, you hit the last corner, you take a left turn and you see 250 to go.
Yeah.
Well, at that corner, I looked at my watch and I'm like, I've got like 85 seconds to run 300 meters. Like, I can actually do this. Like,
yeah,
the last probably 15 minutes, I thought I'd thrown it away.
Yes.
And then suddenly it's back on the cards. I'm like, I can't handle this anymore. So yeah, I could actually enjoy the finish because I had just enough time in the bank to,
nice,
to finish it off. So
far, that's it's good. I like that insight too. Like, that's something that you've changed, where you used to be so hell bent on your pace and your splits, like it seems like almost every K.
Yeah.
And then shifting your watch to every 5K and only checking it sort of here and there. I think that makes it easier to relax out there, doesn't it? And just sort of feel the race out a bit and not. I think the watch can be a positive, but then it can also be a negative. And I think if we check it too often and it's enforcing that we're going slower,
yeah,
I think we can get a bit in our head and that can detract from our performance.
Especially, yeah, how we're running too. Like, there's, yeah, a big negative with splits bouncing like nearly 10 seconds a K between, like,
yeah,
headwind and,
yeah,
surging and not surging, and
yeah,
you can easily go, well, that was a slow K, I'm struggling, and you're,
yes,
off the back of the group, and
yeah,
you could have had a much better day if you weren't focusing on that, just,
yes,
by your mindset.
Yeah, and yeah, the 5K splits will boil down the averages a bit more, so it's like, yeah, you get a headwind split, you get a tailwind split, you get an uphill, downhill, and so you're more likely to and you'll probably just feel that it was a 17:30 late in the race anyway. Like, you kind of probably knew, I've slowed down a touch. Yeah.
And that's, yeah, the hard thing with Gold Coast too. Like, not only do you have the first 15K with a headwind, when you turn at the northern point at just before 37, you got 5.5K, oh, yeah, headwind to finish.
That's in the back of your head too, I bet you.
Yeah, and,
yeah,
and everyone loses time there, but we,
yep,
were rolling so well. Like, I've laid a found out from the southern point to the northern point, I ran 68.50 for a half marathon from those two points.
Oh, really?
So
far out.
So then to...
That's only a minute off your PB.
Yeah, yeah, a minute off my PB for in the middle of a marathon. And but then you start hitting that headwind at the end, and mentally it's very hard to go, I've got to keep pushing, because 2K later, I've felt it before.
Yep.
You feel like your race is done. You go from feeling, all right, let's go, to 38K, you're like, I don't think I can finish.
Yes.
Which I think the conditions play a big part in that mindset. And so you just do enough to, I've got to keep this pace going. Whatever this pace is, this is going to get me to the finish. Like if I,
yeah,
if I ask for too much, it's not safe yet.
So. Yeah, yes, yep, yep. No, no, brilliant insight. And Apple's like your training partner. Like he had a good day. We both know that he's very talented, and I think he signed up for Valencia later in the year. He just missed the 220. He had a PB performance, and it was his best ever marathon. And you can't be disappointed with a PB. But I know he would have been so much happier if he was just on the other side of 220. Have you had a chat to him, and how, what's his thoughts?
He ran nearly 2 minute PB, but it's so bittersweet as well. I, as soon as I finished, I turned around and he was at the top of the straight. It was so it's hard. Like, you want to celebrate your run as well, but I was so gutted for him, because we've spent so many hours training for it
and talking about that barrier, I reckon.
And
it's just numbers, but it's funny, isn't it?
It's a big barrier. Like it's like, if you're world class, I guess it's 210, or it's 3 hour marathon.
There's always some barrier.
There's always a time barrier, if you like to admit it or not. But it's just I would have loved for him to be on the other side of 222, because we spent so long out there as well. It was probably 34K I moved away from him.
Yeah.
And he lost about half a minute to me in that last 8K. And and at the end, that was enough.
Yeah, like,
that
was he only missed it by 20 seconds.
Yeah, so that was enough of me going under it and him missing it. Very fine at that stage. So, because you're not going to start running 3 minute Ks at the end of your marathon. So
I think he's very much got it there. It's just that... it's just that body, isn't it? It's been able to, and I think just another marathon in the legs, another build up. He's not as experienced at the marathon as you, but he's got the talent to, I think, keep taking some time off. It's just a patience thing. And I think we look at people like you or Liam Adams, where Liam had a big breakthrough, like broke 210 for the first time, ran 208. And he's been at it for just as long as you at the marathon, and probably I'm sure has had just as many self-doubts that it'll ever happen, and maybe that's as good as I'll get. I think you look at people like yourself or Liam as inspiration, because there's always something that you can work on and tinker with, or something that you're like, oh, okay, well, how can I... make my body more robust late in the race, like what can I do different, or is it just a case of doing another build up?
And that's the thing, I said to Craig after the race, it's like, not a lot went wrong. Well, we've gotten a lot right. Nutrition, like for both us on race day during the race, was perfect. Which, if not many things are going to go perfectly on race day, but if you can get your nutrition nailed down, then you're a long way to succeeding whatever time you're trying to run. And we just got tired. Like, there was nothing that broke down or that struggled. Like, people pulled out because of injuries crept up in the race or this and that. But nothing really prevented us from running faster apart from getting tired. And my coach said to me just that, like, on the Sunday night. Like, he said, it's not like some people will break 220, but they'll be on their absolute limit and just get under at the end. We lost time. We were on 218 and a half pace. So we're now looking at it like there's more time out there. Like it might always be out there. Like it might not go faster now, but there's that carrot to say it is out there, because we were on it. Like,
yeah.
So which is exciting. And I said just that to Craig as well. So, and he goes to Valencia, probably a bigger pack,
yep,
cooler conditions, because Gold Coast can get quite warm. It didn't get too warm, but it's, yep, still, it's not your European sort, nah, of spring marathon.
Yeah.
Probably
regarded as a quicker course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot in his favour going to Valencia and going faster.
Mate, did you ever give up on the 220 barrier? Like, was there ever a moment where you're like, ah, this just isn't going to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. A lot. even Melbourne last year after the prep that I, yeah, had,
yeah,
I was like, if I can run 224, even, like, that's a minute and a half PB,
yep,
I'll take that. Like, that might be it. I'll, yep, take that. And then 220 wasn't to be. You got to accept that, you know, you get older and life changes and the variables change. And I think maybe not having that pressure on to do so also helped me get there.
Yeah. So, yeah,
like, even Gold Coast, like, yes, I went out to run it, but I ran it with a willingness to blow up and run 230.
Yeah. Which
that fear of failing holds us back as well, trying to chase those barriers. So if I had any apprehension of it turning sour out there,
yep,
and I probably wouldn't have gone with that group.
Yeah. Like, oh, I think I was looking at the halfway splits and I was almost just in awe. I'm like, geez, look at these two, like John and Craig, like, they've gone through in 69:30. They're not going to die wondering. They're really trying to make this happen. And I think you're in your total own, like, right to be trying, like, you proved that you were, like, to be shooting, yeah, for that. Like, you proved it because you both, well, you just got, and Craig got so close. So, like, it was awesome to watch as a spectator. But yeah, I like that, idea of, just almost like, not fearing failure. And almost being a bit more relaxed too. Even just the idea that you gave those kids high five, like, I reckon that's almost, I don't know, what struck me was like fatherhood. Like, you're a father now, you were, you saw the kids and it meant something. And so then it wasn't just all about your time and your run, like, you were sort of like, there was something, and that distracted you, but like, you're, I guess you're a little bit more than running now. Like, you've obviously got, like, your kids, that you pour so much energy into, taking them to Auskick and et cetera, all that kind of stuff, and making sure that they're happy and healthy. And I think often people think, oh, I'm a dad now, I'm not going to run faster, but you've run faster as a dad. And so there must be something to it. Like, yeah, okay, you have less time, but maybe you needed to have less time so you train more efficiently. Maybe you needed less time so that you've prioritize the right things and you're more balanced.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. Like, because I've spent more of my career stuck in the one spot than what I have, like, the last 8 months. I've found like nearly 6 minutes of marathon PB, which is madness. And
yeah,
but yeah, I think you get caught up as well. Like, if I hadn't run that time in Melbourne, I wouldn't have then chased the 219.
Yeah,
because as much as you don't like to admit, like, it's everyone outside your bubble that, like, at Melbourne, I'm like, I'm going with the 222 pace group. And there's people on the start line going, yeah, but you run 225. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
So it's that, yeah, that whole thing, like, if I chase 219 with a 225 time and run 230, it's like, why do you do that? That's foolish.
Whereas, yes, yeah,
even with the time I ran at Melbourne,
yep,
if it didn't work out, it's like, well, you know, he's expected to try and make that jump.
Yes.
Or is a 218 guy trying to run 215? It's expected. Yes. Even if it's good or bad at the end of the day, it's,
yep,
that's what you got to target. So
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
that relaxed me as well, because it's like,
yep,
I'm meant to do this.
Yeah.
I'm not jumping steps anymore.
100%. Yeah, I think that's really well said. I remember my first ever marathon at Melbourne, I ran 224. And then I got like this, a few messages from people like, oh, you might be able to break 220 one day. I never have. But then I was talking to my coach like after that, and he's like, nah, you've only run 224. I think your next logical step is 222. try to break 222 or run 222 first, and then you're sort of in a ballpark to consider. You're in the conversation to break 220. And I think that's right. Like, I think that Melbourne result really helped this result. But yeah, having that, like, that not skipping steps and going, okay, well, yeah, you want to be here, but you've got to do all these steps to get there. And a lot of people look at the person they want to be and they try to, like, emulate the training that they're already doing, that they've taken 20 years to get to, or 20 years of results, or 20 years of beliefs and experiences to get to that way of behavior. And so I think that's well said. It's like, yeah, we've got to kind of do the steps to get there. Yeah, but I think that's just wisdom speaking. It's experience speaking. I had coaches telling me that, like, for a few years, but it still made me, I still trained too hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. Like, that's where I asked, like, before, when we said, oh, do you have to make the mistakes to learn? And I think I've come to the realization that to a certain extent, you have to make mistakes, because otherwise you're not learning, or you're not pushing hard enough. Like, but it's a case of, like, are you actually listening to those mistakes and learning from those mistakes, or you just keep making the same mistake?
Yeah, and for years, that's all I did, was make the same mistakes.
Yeah. But that's so refreshing too, to hear you say that, like, because a lot of people are too, they don't want to admit that they made mistakes. But I think as soon as you start opening up to the process, like, well, I'm only human and no one's perfect. And if I want to actually get better, as soon as I start owning mistakes and respecting that they're part of the training process, then that's when you're going to start seeing things shift and learning from, like, your experiences, like, to know that that's just, yeah, part of it.
And that's why, like starting with Ben, like, it's like you say, when you're young and you got a blank canvas, it was exactly like that feeling again. Like, I've gone to him, like, do whatever to get me to my goal. And we said, this is the goal, and I've been stuck. I told him all the flaws, everything that, all the mistakes.
Warts and all.
Warts and all. Like, I wasn't just going to sugarcoat and say, yep, I've run this time, I want to run this time. It was like, I've made this mistake, I've done this. So we started the conversation at the very beginning of this is the landscape and this is what we need to do to go forward. And it's only 18 months. So that's,
it's pretty rapid, to be honest. It's really, really amazing coach-athlete relationship. You listening to him and having the confidence to try something new, but also Ben listening to your past experiences and going, no, let's try something different and let's do this. And really going, well, that obviously hasn't worked because you've been stuck here. Let's try something different. Like, that's awesome. And that's an experience that I think that's why it's so interesting to have you on the show, not just because of your result, but just because of the disparity between results and the sudden improvement that you've had by shifting and changing things up and shaking it up.
And and don't get me wrong, like, it has been a lot of hard work. Like, I was doing some 65K weekends as well. But, but it's knowing when to force it and when to not force it, which I think that's the biggest note from it all, which I never used to make. Like,
I think it used to be like, go, 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 go.
Yeah. Whereas I'm still willing to put my neck out and go, this is going to help the marathon, and it's on the edge of what's sensible.
Yep.
But then back off here. So
too good. And mate, where to from here? So like, you've ticked off this goal that I've heard you talk about and I know has been on your mind for pretty much since 2005, like, or for a long time, like, I know that. Where to from here? Because, like, there's some people that lose a bit of motivation, like, you hear of post-Olympic blues, or you see it a lot when people achieve this long-term goal that's been driving them real hard, like, for a long time, and it's this, like, itch that they just, like, need a scratch, and then you suddenly relieved of that itch, or is there still more? Like, what, like, I mean, I don't want you to, you don't have to say anything if you don't want to, because I really want you to bask in the glory of, like, achieving what you've achieved, because you put so much. I see too many people achieving a goal and then going, okay, what's next? Like, no, spend a bit of time and just go, and reflect and bask in the glory of what you've achieved and appreciate all the effort and all the lifetime of running that you've put into this result. But has your mind already, like, I guess, like, flickered also to the future, or have you just sort of enjoying the moment?
And that's the thing, I've made that mistake too. Like, yeah. I've had races that I've run PBs in, and then it's like, right, I've got to plan this.
Yeah.
How many weeks to this race? Like, the very day, and I spent so many years of running not enjoying it all, because it's more like a job, because you're like, what's the next race I need to keep improving?
Yeah.
Whereas I was able to go Gold Coast, I got nothing planned for the weeks after. My program says I got run like walking days every second day for weeks. So I'm like, it's just, everything's just really relaxed. So I'm like, I can actually enjoy this. And I've enjoyed it. And, but at the same time, if I try to break 220 and went out in 70 minutes and missed it or just got it, then I probably would have been happy. But the way I've run it, knowing that there is potentially time there, I'm like, well, I've got to go again.
I thought, you hinted at that, like, and that, like, that's so funny, like, runners, I always like the idea of, like, we're surfers just chasing the next big wave, and, like, the target's always moving. As long as we, like you say, like, you just walk, jog for the next month, and you're cherishing what you've achieved, and you are, like, really, like, enjoying it, I think there's nothing wrong in that, like, but it's just, like, that's so cool. So, yeah, you're thinking of faster.
I think that's a big change as well. Like, I'm enjoying my running. Like, when I was just a slave to the clock, and I've got to do this, and I can't squeeze this in today, I've got to miss these days, and then you get sick and you miss more.
Yeah.
Running wasn't enjoyable. Like, we've spoken before, like, when we did the 50K, the podcast there. Halfway through that, I'm like, I've got to get this done because I've had enough. Like, I'm done. Like, I can't get anything more out of myself. And this has taken my mind off. I would have stopped 3 months ago if we didn't do that.
Like,
And then there's been times since, like, motivation's low. Like, and then you start going, all right, I'll do this race, or I'll do another 12 months and I'm done. Which, that was meant to be this year. So, like, middle of last year, my wife, Belinda, and I decided we can't do the same race all the time.
Yep.
I don't want to keep trying to run PBs into my 50s or whatever. Like, that's not going to happen. So I need an end point, because for me, everyone's time-based. I need an end point.
Yep.
Someone needs to know, you hit your end point, just jog around. Like,
I
couldn't physically allow myself to stop.
Yep.
So, because we're always chasing that next big wave. So.
Yes. Also, you feel like, you need someone to tell you, like, okay, this is enough, John.
You've gone long enough.
Yeah.
I'll keep
being
miserable as well, trying to not enjoy running, but trying to get, maybe if I do one more race, I'll run that PB. But now, I've done it twice in a row. I'm like, well, whatever I get now is an absolute bonus. So
I like that. I would 100% agree. I think I've seen how hard you've worked, and that time, like, that you did last weekend is just something that you should forever be proud of. Like, and just the run, and just even the process of how you change things up, and like we've detailed in this chat, to get there and mix it up, and it's been really enlightening to see the inner workings to it. When you do sort of, like, get old and you can no longer run, say, a 218 or that's just not on the cards, you will still run, or, like, what, like, will you just, like, what do you think, like, where does running sit? Like, obviously, like, you won't be chasing, like, times, but, like, how important do you think, like, running just on a social / fitness health level is to you?
I've always seen it, for me, like, everyone's different, but for me, it's either all in or not in.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can't get a little bit slower each year, and I either have to be given 100% or I'll just jog around for the fun of it.
Yes.
Like, social running and things like that. So I think I'll always run.
Yeah.
But it's just that competitive side it's almost so exhausting to be competitive for so long.
Yeah.
And trying to be competitive, like, even against yourself.
Yeah.
To then keep that going till you're 70. Like,
yes.
Whereas some people can. Like, hats off to them. But 100%. That's definitely not me.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's cool. Everyone's so different and they're running why so different. It's just good to hear, like, the nuances and the differences. Like, mate, oh, this has been a ripper chat. Is there anything else that, like, you wanted to add or say before we wrap up? Because I've really enjoyed it.
No, just in case my wife does listen to this.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to go back to Gold Coast next year.
Yeah, so you reckon? Yeah, one more role?
Because one thing I've been to and fro about overseas, but overseas, for one reason or another, never worked for me. And I was chatting to Craig about it as well. You leave your family at home or you take them with you. Like, there's sets of problems for either.
Yep.
And I've struggled doing both.
Yep.
Like, you're stressing out about, is everyone okay? Is the baby happy? Like, we took our son Henry over to Doha for the World 50K Champs in 2015. He was 4 months old.
Yeah.
And I was so stressed about doing that trip that everything was fine. He was fine. But I ended up sick like a day before the race because I was just so stressed.
Yes.
Or I leave him at home for doing Berlin. Like, he was 8 weeks old. I left him at home. And that was stressful because I'd left him at home. So So I think that's out. So when you look at it, like, fast course in Australia, I now know that I can run that fast at Gold Coast.
Yep.
Like, as soon as I finished Melbourne, I'm like, if that was Gold Coast, I'd go 2 minutes faster.
Yep.
And I did. So why it's so hard to sink in as well, because I had these little sort of side goals about or how it was going to play out, and it has played out pretty much how I thought. So
it's good. It's that must be a great feeling to wake up in the morning, and I bet you're still sort of coming into terms with it. You wake up in the morning and you're like, did that actually happen?
Well, and like you say, like, we threw it out there, like, to do it. Like, we didn't just go 220 on the dot, we're going to run even pace, we're going to do it.
Yeah,
we chucked it out there. All for glory, like, really. So, and I think the second half was the fastest second half I've run as well in a marathon. So it's
after matching your brother's half marathon split.
Have we mentioned that yet? No, in all fairness, like, he did really, he ran, a minute and a half PB, and his training partner Bevan, much the same as well, so.
Yeah. No, they were wrapped.
And I think that calmed me as well, because generally I wouldn't have people stay with me. I'm very introverted, I got to focus on this race and that's it. And I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
Yep, you can stay.
Yeah.
Bevan can stay. Like, it might distract me a little bit more and make it more relaxing. So,
yeah.
I think it's just, I don't know, growing with age, I guess.
Like, No, it's funny you say that. And it's even like what you said about the international marathon idea. Like, it's funny how some people are like, oh, do a Berlin, do a Valencia. But then, you know, going over there, eating their food, your different time zone, like, there's just so many variables that you can't, or that are just different.
Yeah.
And then, like, is it different humidity or climate, or just these subtleties that you're just not used to. And then, like you say, the travel stuff with family and those stresses. So I think there's often things that aren't talked about because people just go, oh, fast course, do this. Yep. But like, you're like, well, no, maybe my best scenario is to run something locally because then, you know, I can, you know, it's easier, it's less stressful with my family and I feel better there. But then also, like, I'm used to the conditions, the course, I know what to expect. But it's just funny how you say that even just with people staying with you, you don't, like, maybe in the past you'd automatically go, no, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Suddenly, like, you just sort of let it happen and you're like, oh, maybe that calmed me or maybe that made me more relaxed.
Yeah, because you get used to a good prep run well as the only scenario for a race, whereas as soon as you have a less than ideal or bad prep and run well, it changes everything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Suddenly it's like, I don't have to stress about these little things I've spent 15, 20 years stressing about, because it doesn't matter. Like,
Yeah.
The only thing you can control is what you've done in training, and everything else. Like I used to get frustrated missing a tram or a bus on the Gold Coast before the race. It's like,
we've got to
get this done. I got to get my bottles in, or I got to pick up my beer, and it's got to be now. And like, because you're just so consumed with how important your race is as well. Whereas at the end of the day, it really isn't. Is it?
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's that idea of relaxedness. That's so good. I think if we're too rigid and go, oh, we have to have this superstition, this ritual, this routine, it has to all happen like clockwork. We're not actually a very resilient or diverse or robust performer.
Yeah.
But then as soon as you're a bit more fluid and flexible with your quirks and a few things, but if you've got too many of them, then it can be actually like more detrimental, I think, because we're just so rigid. And it's funny, like we can draw these, like, you know, there's the idea of correlation versus causation, and we can make these correlations, these funny correlations. Oh, I wore these jocks when I ran that PB, so I have to wear these jocks, these socks, and I have to do this before this performance because that's when I run well. But yeah, is it just a correlation or is it causative? Like that's, you only learn that through experience and time. And like you said, you have like something that's like a less than ideal prep and you run well, and straight away you can be like, oh, maybe that doesn't matter so much.
Yeah. It's a complete, it blows my mind, and at the same time, it's a game changer. Like really.
Yeah. Johnny, awesome. I've waffled on too long, and you've been brilliant.
This is the only time we get to catch up.
Yeah, exactly. thanks so much for coming over to my place and recording this chat. Thanks for putting this chat out to the world, because it's been awesome to follow your career and to document such an amazing highlight of your career on this podcast. And a lot of people will know of your journey, and to hear of the inner workings of it and your reflection on the whole performance, it's quite valuable for other runners, and even that might actually help them too. So thanks for chatting today.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me, mate. It's been awesome. Good. Thank you.
On you, mate.